Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. Hey, welcome back. In this episode today, we're going to focus on episode 3. I had to listen to it again this morning, and I have some thoughts on it. Before we dive into that, I wanted to mention, you know, these episodes are being recorded a week or so in advance. And so by the time you're listening to this, I'm hoping that this has subsided. But I was just noticing all of the flooding events happening in Washington. I hadn't really been paying close attention to the weather news recently, but saw that they've been experiencing atmospheric river after atmospheric river, bringing in just tons of rain, inches and inches of rain, and there is more expected this week, up to 3 or so inches in the next couple of days. They had a couple of levees break, flooding areas causing evacuations. There were multiple, it seemed like 10 or so different river flood warnings, some of them major flood warnings. And it goes to show that, you know, our infrastructure is not prepared for the task when it comes to these what were once considered 1 in 1,000 year storms, which may now be happening much more frequently. While some areas, you know, like the western U.S., excluding the Pacific Northwest, so states like Arizona, Nevada, Utah, Southern California, New Mexico, are receiving very little amounts of rainfall or snow, causing concerns about the Colorado River this coming year. Others will receive too much rain, and this will become more and more exaggerated as climate change continues to have more outsized impacts. All right, let's jump into episode 3 on energy. I'm just going to start right off with some of the critiques that I have about this episode, because, yeah, just right off the bat, starting the episode, I have listened to this one a few times over the last few years. Sometimes I'll listen through. I want to remind myself, what are new listeners of the podcast hearing? What are maybe some gaps that I need to cover now? Those types of things. Or I'll have somebody ask a specific question about one of the episodes, and so I'll go back and listen to, you know, the statement I made to help clarify or whatever that might be. But for whatever reason, listening through it this time just hit differently. The beginning of that episode, I started it, you know, me and Kellen, by talking about, we were joking about, you know, he's like, how do I become Collapse aware? How do I become part of the Collapse community? And this just goes back to what I said, you know, in episode 1 about how I wish I had used less language up front that made it sound like understanding Collapse puts you into some exclusive club. And part of it is defendable, I think, when I think about the fact that, like, any niche group, your child has some disease, right? And it's a very rare genetic disease. And you start doing research on it. And, you know, you befriend other people who are going through similar experiences. And suddenly there's an adoption of new language and acronyms and all sorts of things that come along with that, that most people would have no idea what you're talking about. Over the course of your experience maneuvering that challenge, by the end of it, you could write an entire novel, I don't know, about the experience, and you could fill it with things that the average person is not going to understand. The same could be said, really, of any niche topic, right? It could be anything that you are an expert at work, a hobby that you might have, et cetera, et cetera. And that comes with its own, again, language, terminology, acronyms, et cetera. So it's natural for this to happen, but because of the subject matter, I just know that there are some people who listen to that and are like, ew. And I don't necessarily blame them. It gets worse. I got more cringy after that because I was like, oh, well, if you haven't joined Reddit yet, like, that's where you got to start. And again, it just goes back to this thing that, like, I wished I had not referenced Reddit so much. It's not like, I mean, it makes me sound like the average stereotypical Reddit user. While Reddit markets itself as the front page of the internet, it's not necessarily the academic center of the universe. And I regret, I think, focusing on that and telling him that if he wants to consider himself a Collapse aware person or part of the Collapse community, that he needs to have a Reddit account to do it. Part of me, I think, was just poke, poking fun at Kellen because he's chronically offline, especially when it comes to social media and those types of things. But hey, there is the opposite of being chronically offline, which is being chronically online. And I think I'd rather be in Kellen's shoes, if we're being honest. And then there was a cringy joke about eating the rich. I mean, it was just, yeah, that first 30 seconds, like, I may even just go back and remove that to sort of alleviate and lessen the amount of cringe that I feel about those first episodes. And I think part of this just comes, as a bit of maturing over the last few years and realizing that this topic carries with it a certain weight. And while I am quick to always confess that I'm not an academic in these things, I'm not an expert on paper, I think the weight of the message itself deserves to be properly sourced and a little less casual in the way that it was presented in that, in the beginning of that episode. So anyway, that was something that bothered me about that episode. The overall message, again, I think was correct. It was the right next step to talk about after, in the last episode, having really laid out the fact that complexity makes societies vulnerable. The natural next thing is to talk about energy, the thing that really enabled us in so many ways to have the explosion of growth that we experienced, and which is also simultaneously sort of the guillotine held over our heads, that we have to continue to have access to this resource, to this source of energy, to continue to function as a society. One change that I might have made was that I focused a lot on the idea of peak oil, which I do think is extremely important and pertinent in the collapse conversation, because it introduces and it allows you to talk about the peak of any resource in the future, to show that there's a bell curve, that discoveries peak and then taper off, that there is a EROEI, or there's an ROI in general on any resource, and that at some point that resource becomes difficult enough to find and extract that it's no longer worth the cost of the effort. And, that means that some of that resource will be left in the ground. We are currently experiencing resource scarcity issues. Recently, things like copper. This is something I have not done an episode on, and I will likely need to do a daily episode on here in the near future. So yes, spending a good amount of time on that and basically stating resources that we require are finite. Energy resources being the very crux, the very main bit of this, right? That facilitated our growth and that it's required for sustaining our society. I do wish I would have focused a little bit more on the flip side of the coin, which is that we may not have a supply side strain, but that there may be a strain in demand. There are still a ton of questions about which one it's going to end up being, right? Are we going to be able to move away from fossil fuels voluntarily at a fast enough rate, replacing them with renewables in such a way that will allow for us to not have to experience a severe energy shock and all of the economic and supply chain and everything issues that would come from that? Many people argue that supply is never going to be an issue and that we will reduce the amount of demand as we shift towards renewables. And so I think I could have highlighted, that demand side collapse is a plausible or possible future scenario, and explain a little bit more about why that's not necessarily a fix. A little bit more about the idea that, okay, so maybe the demand decreases because we move to renewable energy. It doesn't mean that we would stop the use of fossil fuels entirely. I don't think that anybody is arguing that fossil fuels are going to be completely replaced by renewables in the energy sector. Just that renewables can make up the gap. So if right now, in terms of energy consumption, it's 82 or 83% fossil fuels and then 17 or 18% renewables, as the production of those fossil fuels decreases, maybe it gets down to 70 or 60 or 50%, we might hit a point at which it's 50% renewables and 50% fossil fuels for energy production. We still have the other 15% of fossil fuel consumption currently that it goes towards things like petrochemicals, that goes towards plastics and asphalts and lubricants and all these other things that are non-energy products that are going to continue to be fossil fuel derivatives. And on top of that, the renewables themselves, right? Solar panels, batteries, turbines, et cetera, all also come from petrochemicals, from fossil fuels, and from other rare earth minerals. So it brings up, you know, peak production issues in other ways. But I guess the point I'm making is that if renewables can grow fast enough to fill in the gap that gets created as we reduce the amount of fossil fuels being produced, it could prevent the supply shock issue, right? But it's not going to prevent the vast amount of fossil fuels being burned, being released into the atmosphere, which continues to exacerbate and affect climate change. And we've seen as net zero pledges fail time and time again, and as countries, especially now like the United States, basically just throw their hands up in the air and say, we're not even going to attempt it. Anyway, so I think giving both ideas more of a fair shake. That said, I personally am still not convinced that we are not going to see. I personally am not convinced that we are not going to see a supply shock at some point. The percentage of all of our energy consumption that comes from fossil fuels versus renewables is not changing all that much. That 80%+ has stayed relatively consistent as far as the amount of our energy that comes from fossil fuels. Much of the growth, you know, the new energy being added, is being supplied by renewables. But even then, we're still talking about, you know, an electric grid in the U.S. that is 80% fossil fuel driven and 20% renewable. And of that 20% of renewables, the vast majority is hydropower. And we can't really expand too much on hydropower. We've dammed the rivers that there are to dam. And guess what? Those rivers are shrinking. We talked recently in other episodes about how on the Colorado, you've got the Glen Powell Canyon Dam, you've got Hoover Dam, which are both dangerously close to MPP, which is the minimum power production levels. Now, we are growing a lot in solar usage, right? Or at least we were before the Trump administration. It'll be interesting to see what the numbers do now that there are less or no incentives to switch. And as he continues to incentivize drill, baby, drill, and burn, baby, burn. But I guess the point I'm making is we're not making the sort of headway in renewables that I think need to be made in order to really truly reduce the fossil fuel production and emissions. All right, lastly, one other thing I really liked about the episode, I think is just a really apt way to put into the mind of a person who's not familiar with these types of concepts, is to talk about energy slaves. Just like the average person does not think much about, you know, the fact that society has really, for the vast majority of humanity's existence, been very simple hunter-gatherer type societies. We all just picture life as it is today, and that's just kind of what life is, and that's how life's been. In that same way, we don't really consider the luxury that it is to be able to flip a light on, right? Or to put a pot on the stove and have it boil, to get in a vehicle and be able to drive 5 miles in a handful of minutes, especially when in the past, you know, the prospect of a 5 mile journey, especially if it was round trip and you're taking cargo with you, you know, you're talking about a whole day, or at least several hours. All these conveniences that we have are supplied by energy, and that energy has to come from somewhere. I can't remember the exact numbers. I just listened to the episode, so I should remember, but what did I say? Something like 200, 250 energy slaves per person per day at your disposal. It's literally as if each of us has 250 people at our command at any one moment to do the actions that we need them to do to live the luxuries that we have. And of course, that's going to vary by person, by economic state, by where you live, et cetera, et cetera. But it is really staggering to combine that idea of energy slaves with the idea of the complexity that we live in now. Not only is it like having, you know, energy slaves doing work for me in my immediate surroundings, but doing work for me elsewhere. When I run to the grocery store later today and pick up a bag of cereal, I don't know, I'm just throwing something out there. Am I thinking at all about the fact that that cereal came on a truck that gets 7 miles per gallon, which was hauling thousands of different food items that came from a factory somewhere where hundreds of people work using machinery that requires constant maintenance by engineers who got their degrees at a university with all the infrastructure that's required there, that the raw materials for the cereal came from farms across the country or across the world, each involving their own separate transportation needs, their own laborers, their own machinery, their own climate requirements, their own need for water, etc., etc. So now we're sort of combining episode 2 and episode 3. This idea that, yes, we live in a hyper-complex society with an intense need for energy. And while most of us never think about it, that is a massive, massive ask, and it puts society at massive risk. All right, we'll end it there for today and talk about how episode 4 contributes to the conversation tomorrow. Thanks. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.